women have a unique role in creation. Women are the nurturers, the birth givers, the more spiritual of the genders. And Torah teaches that women have a special status. Join Mashi Lipska for the next hour as she expounds the Torah wisdom specific to women. Only on 101.9 High FM.
And a good nerve Shabbos. Delighted to be with you. I'm Mashi Lipska. This is 101.9 High FM. And we are in such an exciting time. By that I mean, in keeping with the story, where the first Rebbe, whose celebration of emancipation from severe, severe imprisonment is celebrated this week, the first Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the first Chabad Rebbe, once was heard saying, "Member daf leb mit der Zeit," we need to live with the times. And from his younger brother, Rabbi Yehuda Leib, the Chassidim found out that what he means is we must live with the parsha of the week, with the times of the week, because in the Torah reading, we don't just hear a story of what was, we hear a story of what is. Not only was the Torah used by Hashem as a blueprint for the world, but the Torah and every single word in it speaks to us, how much more so the portion that we read that week as it is divided up to be finished in a year, as it was started just 7 weeks ago. The Parsha talks to us personally and collectively. It addresses the particular energy, the particular potential in the times that we live in. The particular day relates to the particular reading because it is divided into seven according to the days of the week. It is exhilarating when we can see and relate to the direction that the Torah is giving us now. And we have some incredibly powerful messages that aren't that hard to see. Sometimes we have to look a little deeper. But the parshas that we have been reading are the story of our history, our family, our parents, what they encountered, although they encountered a lot more. Hashem chose to tell us about these particular encounters, challenges, stories, because not only did they happen, but they talked to us very, very personally. And the name of the parasha is Vayishlach, and he sent. We have to say in a spiritual sense that it does relate to us, although what the Torah is talking about here is that Yaakov, our patriarch, Jacob, sent. He sent messengers to his brother, Esav. Nevertheless, the word "and he sent" needs to be taken personally as Hashem has sent each one of us down into this world to be his emissary. We are his messengers, and shluchai shel adam kemoisai. An emissary, according to halacha, Jewish law, is empowered with the strength, with the intention, with the success of the sender. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Conversations with Mashi only on 101.9 High FM.
Ah, what a parsha, Vayishlach. What a time we live in. Yes, not this week, but next will be Hanukkah, commemorating the incredible victory of those who took the initiative, although they were few, against the many. They were the pure against the impure. They were the good ones against the wicked ones. Sound like our times? Hanukkah is celebrated in this month, in the month of Kislev. And this week we have a very special celebration of the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, being released from Tsarist imprisonment. For what? There's never a shortage of slander. We're experiencing it now in the world. Slander against innocent people. Anti-Semitism. Slander has its very special wings somehow that seems to just enter the hearts and minds of people who don't want to take the trouble to find out the truth. Anyhow, the parsha this week also is going to tell us about our patriarch Jacob, who is hated by his brother Esav. Big stuff, but there are messages there that all of us can draw on to deal with the challenges and difficulties and the gray areas in our lives. And I want to begin today with the fact that Esav, the twin brother of Yaakov, Esau, twin brother of Jacob, is coming toward him now with 400 men, with an army of armed people who he has collected with the intention of destroying his brother. Just in last week's parsha, Yaakov kind of barely got away from his father-in-law Lavan, another wicked, difficult person, selfish, a person who only cared about himself, only cared about his wealth, only cared about his own honor. Sound familiar? But Yaakov had successfully managed to run away from him, and he wants to go home to continue raising his family. He wants to look after his wives, his children, and the destiny that lies ahead through them. But first, a challenge. You know, it's a crazy thing. A brother is coming against another brother, armed to the teeth. You know, when Rivka, Rebecca the mother, had sent Jacob away to her brother, to Lavan, until she said Lavan would calm down, she'd actually sent a messenger. She said, I'll call for you. And she sent a message to say that although he's still angry, but with the passage of time, he's kind of softened. And Yaakov is planning now to actually calm him down even more. And he hopes that if he sends him the right message, he'd be able to assure him that there's nothing to be upset about. So Yaakov is sending messengers. Interestingly, we're told that he doesn't send human messengers just in case Esav would harm them, and instead, malachim. The word used for messengers here is angels. And he dispatches angels as messengers ahead of him to his brother Esav. The truth, our teachers tell us that Yaakov was used to having angels around him, but Esav was not. And he was probably too unrefined to survive an encounter with angels. He was too impure. Anyhow, he sends him ahead to say, your servant Jacob says, don't be worried about the blessings that our father has given me. He said, they haven't come to pass. I haven't become a ruler, and I haven't become a master of land. He was blessed with Tal HaShamayim U'Shmanei HaOretz, the dew of heaven, the fat of the land. None of this has come to be. And he does have sheep and cattle. He has servants and maidservants. But it's clear, he says, that the blessings our father bestowed upon me will not come to pass in my lifetime and yours. So I'm asking you, can we live in peace? That was his first approach. And he sent gifts. That was his first approach. And he also prayed. That was his second approach. And his third approach was to prepare for war. And when we look at how he prayed, how did Yaakov pray, and what can it teach us? Well, he began his prayer by saying, Kotointi, I have been made small. Mikol ha-chasadim, because of all the acts of kindness, or mikol ha-emes, and all the trustworthiness, asher asisa imavdecha, that you have done for me, your servant. Kotointi, I've become small. I'm no longer worthy. Jacob had many merits. And he knew that he had many, many merits. But he had the amazing ability to rise above what usually happens, some human short-sightedness. And he realized how infinitely indebted he was to Hashem, and how infinitely indebted we all are to Hashem. Just the fact that we can say, Modei Ani, I thank you, Hashem, in the morning that I opened my eyes, that I can understand that you are there, you are a king, Melechai v'kayam. Just the fact that we can sit up, that we can stand up, that we can walk, that we can see, that we can hear, or some of these things, we are infinitely indebted to Hashem. Yaakov, our patriarch, is teaching us, he puts it into our DNA, the ability to show gratitude, and it is actually the basis of our day, the basis of our religion, gratitude, awareness of God. Everything that happens is because of Hashem. And to remember that he's sending us as his emissaries, and he has filled us with potential, filled us with power, filled us with abilities, and they are all meant to be used, not wasted. But anyway, back to Yaakov. He was certainly aware that he had done so many good things in his life, so he has many merits. But he's also able to see how much Hashem has done for him. He escaped from Esav. He ran away to Lavan. On the way, he was robbed of everything. He crosses the Jordan by putting his stick into the Jordan. The miracles are all around him. He meets, he marries, he works. He gets miraculous, miraculous repayment. And he's able to get away from Lavan with a pure, whole family who has not been influenced by the violence, by the evil, by the absolute self-centeredness and small-mindedness of his host society. So how does he pray now that his brother Esav is coming toward him with 400 men armed to the teeth? He begs Hashem to save him and his family, but he doesn't say, I deserve. Instead, he says, Kotointi. He starts off by saying, thank you, Hashem. I have been diminished. I'm no longer worthy because you were so good to me, but please, Hashem, do it for your sake. Do it out of your pure kindness. The truth is, of course Yaakov was worthy. Of course he deserved for Hashem to save him and his family. And of course he wasn't even just raising this family for selfish reasons, but for Hashem's reasons. Nevertheless, he asked Hashem to save him and his family now out of Hashem's infinite pure kindness. We need to follow our father's example. And it changes everything in our perspective, because when we ask Hashem for something, we should get that perspective. We should understand how blessed we are. But then we should appeal to Hashem for his help. If we just say, I'm so good, I deserve, of course we've done many mitzvahs. But we're told that Hashem's response will only be limited to the extent of our worthiness. But when we humbly, truly humbly disregard our own worthiness, what we have managed to do, and like Yaakov, we show that we're able to rise above our natural selfishness or short-sightedness. It's natural. That's how God made us. But then Hashem will respond with brachas ad bli dai, brachas that transcend the natural order. So thank you, Yaakov Avinu. Thank you for that incredible lesson of katointi. And to say that when the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, came out of jail after being cruelly imprisoned in isolation, not seeing the outside world, not seeing the sun, not having any of the things that he normally had with him. Step by step, to have to refuse to eat because the food wasn't kosher, to refuse to just listen to what they were saying, but to say, but surely no. Miracle upon miracle took place for him in that place, but he was removed from his chassidim. He was removed from his family. It was horrible. At the end, when he came out vindicated, and he returned to his chassidim, and he came back from Petersburg intact, the Hasidic teaching, the Hasidic discourse that he delivered, which actually is the second letter in the fourth part of the Tanya, his first word was katointi. Katointi mikol achsodim umikol ha'emes. Hashem, I have been humbled. I have been made small by all the acts of kindness, by the trustworthiness, the emes that you've done for me. And he said to his chassidim, despite the fact that it was by slander that I was put into jail, by our own people, as it were, by other Jewish people who wanted to stop the spread of Hasidus, there is to be shown no anger, no vindictive behavior, only love, 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 and kindness. That mitzvah continues, and please God, that will work. We need to know that when we take revenge, when we say, listen here, the way I was treated, you deserve, God forbid, it backfires. In our own situations, yes, life is challenging. It's challenging in every area, unfortunately, and we wish everyone recovery and wholeness. There are challenges in relationships. My spouse isn't good to me. I'm still looking for a spouse. My spouse, God forbid, is sick. I am sick, God forbid. My dear ones are sick. Children. My children are driving me mad. I wish I had a child. It hits us very, very deeply. My children are not giving me nachas. My children are too demanding. I have too much money. I don't know what to do with it. It's driving me mad. People are bothering me. I have to fix my houses and my cars and my boats and my airplanes. I'm just overwhelmed. I don't have enough money. The landlord is knocking on the door for the rent. There isn't enough food on the table. It's endless. We are vulnerable. We are human. But these are the challenges to the shliach. We are God's emissary, and he isn't making it simple. So the first thing we need to remember is that all the answers are right here in the story of life, the Torah, Torah's Chaim. Everything has a positive side, but the greatest light is hidden. And we're going to encounter this Esav. Why does Yaakov want to make peace with him? Why doesn't he just kill him? Why doesn't he just make another plan? because Yaakov recognizes something incredible about his brother Esav. We need to remember that nothing that God has created in this world, even the bad, Esav really was not good, has a hidden, powerful, raw, godly energy. It's in the physical world and the material world, in the relationships. And the worse it looks, the more powerful it is. And Yaakov, being who he was, really wanted to harness that, to make peace with that. It's an incredible, incredible insight to know that everything that comes from Hashem is love, and everything does come from Hashem. And some of it, the hidden good, the concealed good, comes from a place of greater love than the revealed good. And Hashem is preparing the story of our exile in everything that happened to our patriarchs, everything that happened to our forefathers, is an example and also an empowerment for all of us. And we need to talk about the power of Esav. Who is this Esav? What is his power? And why does Yaakov spend so much time with this Esav? Why is he hoping to bring him round? And does he bring him round? It's an incredible, incredible parsha that just talks to us about now. Please, God, we'll talk a little bit more about this after a short break.
You're listening to Conversations with Meshi only on 101.9 High FM.
I'm Meshi Lipsker. This is 101.9 High FM, and we are talking the Parsha. We are talking how this Parsha, every Parsha, talks to us personally. And we're talking about the brother of Yaakov, Esav. And he's so in the Torah, so it must be talking to us. The Torah doesn't even use one extra letter. How much more so when we are exposed to narrative and detail? Each one of these things is speaking to us. So we have a story where Jacob hears that his brother Esav is still angry at him and coming toward him with 400 armed men. And he prepares in three ways. The first thing he does, diplomacy, appeasement. He sends him gifts, very good gifts, very expensive gifts. The next thing he does is to pray. And he prays with humility and he asks for Hashem's generosity and kindness, not because he deserves it. And thirdly, then, he prepares for war. Interesting. He doesn't rely on preparing for war. He doesn't prepare for war first. He hopes he doesn't have to go to war. But he knows that living in this world, we have to live in the world. And we have to be able to have that backup, as it were, into which Hashem's blessings would please God come. He hopes he doesn't need the blessings for that. He hopes that the gifts, the prayer, because gifts are also a vessel in this world, that they will do the job and soften the heart of his brother. Why is he going out of his way so much to appease, to soften Esav? He could just pray, Hashem, save me from Esav. I got other things to do. I got to raise my family. I'm establishing a nation. But Yaakov recognized that Esav is a power. Right now, it isn't focused on goodness, but there are godly sparks from such a high place that have fallen low. And this raw, powerful, godly energy is in his brother Esav, which is why in the Parsha 2 weeks ago, it was this brother that Yitzchak, Isaac, wanted to bless, because he understood that that is the ultimate. to take this raw, untamed, as it were, godly energy from the world of Tohu, which had fallen from such a high place, because we're told that Hashem created a world before he created this world, but the energies, the lights, were too powerful for the vessels, and the vessels shattered, and the sparks fell, and they fell into physical objects, food, places, people, and our work is to elevate them by using this energy, by using the mitzvahs, combining physical and spiritual, doing a mitzvah with something physical. We have no idea how much light is brought into the world, how we are finding one of those sparks. God leads us to the spark, to that encounter, to that place, to that person, to that thing. And when we use it correctly, we bring the greatest lights. We redeem the sparks that are bigger and more powerful than the world that was created after that, which is tikkun, which is rectification. Anyhow, Esav is approaching. Yaakov organizes his family, and then he presents his family, and they all bow down, and then Yaakov himself bows down to Esav. And Esav has been overcome by Jacob's gift and this display of brotherly love, and he actually kisses him. It says Yaakov bowed 7 times as he approached his brother. Is he allowed to bow to someone as lowly as Esav? What was he doing? And the Rebbe explains that Yaakov acknowledged the qualities of Esav that were superior to his own. And Yaakov understood that to bring this world to its ultimate destiny, it is necessary to combine Esav's strength with his own, with Yaakov's strengths. At the same time, he understood, he accepted that it was he, Yaakov, who would have to do the work. It wasn't going to be Esav. He, Yaakov, would have to be the one to oversee this combination, this synthesis, in order for it to work. Now, Yaakov, all the years, had been faithful to the study of Torah. So he's the one who possesses the breadth of vision and knowledge of God's will that is necessary to harness the raw, untamed power of Esav. So Yaakov's hoping that he'd be able to impress Esav enough that Esav would submit to his leadership. He hoped that if he appeases him with this lavish gift, and then he acknowledges Esav's superior strengths, and he informs him of a fascinating thing as well, that Esav could be subdued. What did he inform him? We find that in the Pasuk Katointi, right at the beginning of his prayer, and now he's sharing that with Esav. He's saying to Esav, you know what? I was at Lavan. That place is the seat of immorality, the seat of deceit, the seat of swindling, of cheating. And when he informed him, he said, you know, Esav, I've proven myself capable of raising a righteous family and amassing a sizable fortune by outwitting the crafty, sneaky Lavan. In other words, I'm strong, Esav. I'm not a little wallflower. I'm not a feather in the wind. So he bows to him. He's trying to get close to him. He's trying to impress him. What is the purpose? He wants the raw power of Esav to be joined with his learning and studying and knowledge. He wanted a synthesis of the two. But it became clear that Esav wasn't ready to cooperate. And Yaakov understands something else, that Esav's strengths, well, to harness those is going to be a long, difficult process. This union of Esav's superior strength and Yaakov's wisdom, that's going to take place at the time of Mashiach. And therefore, doing that is the key to bringing in the era of Mashiach. Yaakov realizes that, please God, when Mashiach comes, we will live together, the physical, the spiritual, the raw energy that's found in the world will be elevated and illuminate and shine in this world. And we need to take a lesson from this. Our undying devotion to Torah, to mitzvahs, trying to grab another mitzvah, just quickly do it, phone someone, uplift them, give another coin to tzedakah, say another psalm, call someone and say, you know what, lighting candles tonight, let's light them by 6:15, and you know, it's a wonderful time to pray for whatever you need personally, sharing the Torah knowledge that you learn. All of this takes us closer to Mashiach, and it's not easy. We're all busy people. But the key to bringing Mashiach is to stretch, to keep studying the Torah, keep doing mitzvahs, keep showing love. Ever since Yaakov's time, most of this has been refined. Esav's power, mostly refined. And the Rebbe says we are now on the threshold of the final messianic redemption. Let's do all that we can to do one more wonderful thing. It is our deed, we never know, who could really put it over the top. And that's why Yaakov said to Esav, Esav wanted to travel with him. He said, I'll go a little slower. He said, please, my master, go on ahead of me, your servant, and wait there until I reach you, my master, at Seir. Yaakov alludes here to how Esav will be transformed in the Messianic era. As he says, until I reach my master Esav at Seir. Yaakov's approach and his approach to Esav teaches us, how do we neutralize potential hostility of all the Esavs around us? In exile, we will encounter them over and over again, and we have. And we're on the threshold of the Mashiach, so. And the Rebbe explains that if, God forbid, we fall prey to the external comforts of Golos, of exile, because we feel subservient to the rulership of the Esav attitude within us. In other words, I have to be comfortable, and I have to be well-fed, and I have to be well-dressed, and I have to be well this and that, and I'm just doing it for me. It's all good if we do it to share hospitality, to be strong and healthy so we can help other people. Even now we're going on vacation. What is a vacation for? It's in order to recover from everything we've been doing at such a rate so that we can return to uplift this world, to do more mitzvahs. We need to be healthy. It's one of the mitzvahs in order that we can serve Hashem better. We have to see past the facade of exile to its true inner purpose. That's how we neutralize the power of Esav, this, you know, attitude that we encounter outside and inside of ourselves. We need to understand that we are emissaries of God, Vayishlach. We are here to prepare the world to be a dwelling place for God, which will manifest in the Messianic era. At that time, every Esav, every selfishness, every arrogance will be subdued, it will be transformed. And the Rebbe says a fascinating thing. He calls the exile the long adventure. Can you imagine? We've got to view this long adventure of exile as a journey towards Seir. We've got to focus on the ultimate goal. And that's how, even during exile, Esav will be rendered harmless. We need to take everything in this world and we need to use it for a godly purpose. It's an exciting adventure. Adventure means exciting. We have to look at everything, every challenge that happens to us, everything we encounter, as a chance to break out of our confines and limitations. There's an incredible little story that I want to end with. It's a story that really speaks to us. On the one hand, we want to study the Torah. We want to do mitzvahs. Do we have time to buy a new dress? Do I have time to have my nails done? Do I have time to have my shetel done? Yeah, how does it all work together? Because if Hashem made us to understand these things, to want these things, to live in a world where those things are admired, how do we use them to make this world a dwelling place for God? We must make sure that the Esav aspect, which is the selfishness, is subdued. The Esav aspect of, as he says to Yaakov, Yaakov said, take my gifts. Esav said, nah, yesh li roiv, I've got so much of my own. I'm good. And yesh li roiv means I have so much, I have more than I need, more, more, more. Yaakov says, yesh li koil, I have everything that I need. Not more, 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 but I have everything that I need. And we need to be able to have that sense of satisfaction that we do have everything we need because Hashem takes care of us. We do our part. He does his part. We do our human part. We make clean vessels. We behave correctly. We go to work honestly. Whatever we do it knowing that we're in the presence of God and we're an emissary of God. And what he's sending us now or whatever we're encountering is from him. Anyhow, a little story. Pesach was coming near, and the yeshiva students in 770 Eastern Parkway, the Rebbe's yeshiva, the Rebbe's shul, were outfitted with new suits. There was a benefactor, and he paid for every yeshiva student to get a new suit, a free suit. The young men were meant to go to the Lower East Side and choose some new clothing. There was a shop there, and the benefactor was covering the expenses. The next day, the Rebbe noticed a young student who was new in the yeshiva, and he's in the hallway, and he's wearing this oversized, ill-fitting suit. With concern, the Rebbe said to him, tell me, are you eating well? Have you lost weight recently? I'm asking you because your suit, although it seems very nice, seems a bit big on you. Oh, the young man replied, everything's all right, Baruch Hashem. I actually just got this suit yesterday. And then he continues with great enthusiasm, but what difference does it make if my suit is a size too big or a size too small? It's only gashmias, materialism. It's got nothing to do with the important things in life, the ruchnias, the spiritual. And very earnestly, what did our Rebbe say? He said, Chassidism is not asceticism. It's not self-denial. The belief that self-denial is a pathway to God. On the contrary, Chassidus teaches that every aspect of one's physical existence can be channeled into the service of Hashem. It's got to be a team, the body and the soul, like a horse and a rider. We have to be a team. God made both, and he expects us to synthesize and thereby bring about a new day, the day of Mashiach. Good Shabbos.